Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Midweek Takeaway. We're joined by Callum Summerton, CEO of Chill Brands. Welcome back, Callum. How are you?
Yeah, really well, thanks, guys. Good to see you. How are you?
Oh, good, thanks. Since you've been on, you've announced a couple of news items, namely the publication of a prospectus, and you also reached an agreement for your products to be marketed and sold by Flawless, the leading distributor to category specialist vape stores in the UK. Flawless supplies over 5,000 wholesale accounts and has more than 50,000 active customers. Do you want to add some colour to this news, please, Callum?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've been very busy, you know, first taking the prospectus. This has been something that the company and its shareholders in the market has been waiting for since, you know, middle of 2022. It obviously was the, you know, the fundraise in 2022 that we needed to get done to pivot the company, to change into, you know, the beast that we are today. And, you know, this really is the end of that process. We had to get a prospectus done. There are obviously new shares hitting the market, but I like to think that the company's in a radically different place than it was back in 2022 when we started this journey. So it's out there now. I think obviously the company will find a level over the course of the next, you know, short period of time. And from there, we can really start to show the market and the public what we're made of in terms of, you know, our vape sales, our marketplace growth, and where this business is really going. So that's obviously the prospectus, and I don't think there's much more really to say about that other than that we've drawn a line in the sand and it's hard work and growth from here. In relation to the vapes, you know, you mentioned Flawless. We've also obviously signed an agreement with Vape Local, which is operated by Phoenix to retail. And the intention of those two agreements, sort of distribution deals, is, again, as with other activities we've been engaged in, getting our products into the hands of and in front of more retailers than we could achieve on our own. You know, Flawless and Vape Local between them reflect, you know, distribution networks that touch an awful lot of the market. In the case of Flawless, it's vape specific category stores. In the case of Phoenix to retail and Vape Local, it's convenience stores. And between those two areas, we are finding that more stores are picking up the product. People are understanding and seeing the brand. And it really is a case in any consumer goods product, you know, company, the more doors that you open, the more doors that you will open, because people understand that you're serious. You are backing your brand with funding, with marketing, with, you know, a degree of network distribution. And retailers, particularly the independents, but all the way through to the top chains, they want to know the brands they're engaging with can stand on their own two feet and are, you know, being trusted by other people in the industry. And I think that is what we're demonstrating more and more every day.
Okay, so part of this news release was also the details on Smoker Friendly. So tell us the details, obviously, but how is that going to impact Chill and Chill Zero in the United States of America, Colin?
Yeah, so getting this deal over the line has been a long time coming. We've been obviously working in the US market to gather data to show that the product category has legs, to show that the brand itself being, you know, newly rebranded in a new product category actually has a degree of staying power and a good chance of selling through. And we've now been able to present to Smoker Friendly, a good partner of ours from the past as well, if anybody recalls, been able to present to them a pretty compelling case that actually in the stores this has gone into, in convenience, in the pilot scheme, actually the product has done very well. So they will now be trialing it in their stores. They've obviously issued a purchase order to us, but 60 of their stores, they've got you know, more than 800 in total across the country, and they continue to buy up new franchises left, right, and center. But yeah, it's going to be great for us. It's more reach in the US. They'll be taking us into stores in Colorado, Wyoming, Montana, North Carolina, Florida, Missouri, Arkansas, Tennessee, and Indiana. So there are additional states that we've not yet actually touched within that group. And look, this is the largest US category-specific smoke shop, you know, of all. It's the largest in the country of its kind. And the fact that they, you know, as you can see from the quote from Sean, their category director there, they're seeing demand for this sort of product. That echoes exactly what we have heard elsewhere in the market, which is very, very encouraging to us as we go into 2024.
So has it been discussed that if this 60 works out, it will roll out to the 800?
Yeah, it certainly, you know, that is under discussion. And naturally, if you can show whilst in a retailer's, you know, first store footprint that your product sells, of course they want you to expand into as many stores as they can get you into. I think that that follows naturally. So, of course, it's early days for us still, but I have no doubt that these products are going to sell with them. And, you know, actually, if you look at similar sort of comparative products that are on the market elsewhere in the United States, we are extremely price competitive across our 600, 1500 and 3000 puff ranges. So there's absolutely no reason I can see why in time to come we won't be expanding that footprint with Smoker Friendly.
And they'll be taking a selection, will they? They'll be taking the 600, 1500 and 3000, or unlike the UK, which is 1500 and 3000?
Exactly. Yeah, we currently have 13 SKUs or stock keeping units product types in the United States. We've got three flavors in the 600 puff category. That's an entry level device. We've got a mint, a tropical flavor, and the lemon that people will be familiar with here in the UK. We've also then got the 10 different, you know, units across the 1500 and 3000 puff category. Those are obviously in five different fruit flavors. And it's Smoker Friendly and taking all 13, which is great news and a great endorsement of our brand and product.
So you're going to be putting 10 of each one into each shop, I imagine.
They'll take an initial stock that will carry them for both, you know, the first initial fill, but also a bit of a restock behind that. I think what we will see over time is that customers will start off on those lower level devices, the 600s, the 1500 puffs, because there is less of an outlay for them there. You know, they pick it up and try it pretty cheaply. And then once they've found their flavor, once they've decided they like our devices, which I think they will then move on to the 3000 puffs. So I'm expecting that to be the sort of running order in terms of what sells through first. But, you know, I could be very well surprised. The 3000s have been incredibly popular here in the UK, and that is also the case in the pilot stores in the US too.
Great news. So just going back to the prospectus, I suppose it's a question I asked myself as I was involved in that fundraise. Is, as it stands at the minute, a 50% premium on the 2 pence sufficient risk reward for what the company or the position that Chill was in when it raised at 2p. Do you think 50% is a fair return?
Yeah, I mean, I won't necessarily comment on whether the share price as it is today is right or wrong, but I think if you look at where the company was when we raised at 2 pence, again, we're in such a different position now than we were. Back then, we were a CBD company trying to make a niche product work and, you know, not necessarily gaining as much traction as was needed to support, you know, a business that is listed on the London Stock Exchange. Today, we've got a diversified business growing in two areas. We've got a nicotine-free vape product, Chill Zero, which is probably the fastest growing new vape brand in the UK, anecdotally. And we're picking up interest from retailers in the US, you know, across many, many different geographical areas there as well. We've also got a marketplace on chill.com where we're attracting lots and lots of very exciting brands in the alcohol alternative space, nootropics, adaptogens, beauty, natural aluminium-free deodorants, you know, you name it, it's sort of around and about on our site. And, you know, these are things we did not have when we raised at 2 pence. Do I think that based on the deals we've signed since, that, you know, there's a degree of correction? Do I think that there is a lot more latent opportunity in this company, in this share? Absolutely. And I think that we'll, as I say, continue to demonstrate that over the coming days, weeks and months. But you only have to look at the fact that we have signed, you know, a major retailer in the UK within 3 months of launching. We've got, you know, over 400 independent retail stores now picking up our products. These are your local corner shops, petrol stations, Nissas, Mace and vape category specific retailers. You know, that is a lot of traction in a very short space of time, and it's the culmination of, you know, months, over a year of work. So I think that there is perhaps a bit of a lag in recognizing what the company has done, the stage that it's at today, and where it is still yet to go. But this all paints a picture of, I think, a great opportunity to continue to build as not just the fastest growing new vape brand in the UK, but a name that's recognized by anybody who does vape, and also a name that's recognized by anybody looking to buy, you know, wellness, relaxation, stress-free products. There's a lot of, you know, blue sky there.
Yeah, certainly is. So from the perspective of, we talked about the company becoming in some way cash flow positive. Give us an idea of how you see that rolling out.
Yeah, so the key is obviously to sell enough of the product so that first that area stands on its own 2 feet and is washing its face with deals. We try to structure our deals with major retailers such that we are, you know, getting to break even on their slotting fees, on the necessary marketing within the first cycle before you get to reorders. I think beyond that, as you look at the company as a whole, obviously we have, you know, costs of listing different operations in different countries, additional countries that will come online. But I think, you know, more than anything else, the key is to, you know, grow at a sustainable rate. So, you know, it would be very easy for us now to, you know, go out there and throw a lot of money at different distribution deals, at new retailers. We're going to have to do some of that because we want to make this a business that is, you know, sizable, that is growing, that's, you know, making a decent amount of money. And it is, unfortunately, in consumer packaged goods, pay to play. But I don't think that we are too far away from a position where, again, those product sales are, you know, put to work and covering those costs. And the reason I say that is particularly with Chill Zero, we get better margins than a lot of the vaping industry. You know, it, again, it's a product that doesn't cost a great deal more really than a 600 puff conventional nicotine containing vape. However, we can sell it at a higher price. There's a higher puff count. There are restrictions in the market, barriers to entry for a nicotine device that we don't have because of our area of focus. That means we can make more money for every vape sold. Same is true on the marketplace. As we drive more traffic there, as people start, you know, making purchases, buying different brands, cross-pollinating, you know, that is margin for effectively nothing. The key to that marketplace is no downside risk, aside from a little bit of time. We're not taking inventory risk. We're not taking, you know, the chance of the product development costing a lot of money or product movement costing a lot of money. We are purely a sales venue for those brands. And so between those two areas, I think that certainly, you know, we are moving towards a position where, again, the company does eventually break even. So I'm very confident of that.
And how many brands do we now have on the marketplace?
We've got in the UK to date, 25 external brands. In the US, 21. We've got a load more that are signed and are working through our onboarding process at the moment. And we're now, you know, I think in a position where we can say it is a marketplace. Before we had a concept, now we actually have one and we're starting to see customers, you know, go on buy 3, 4, 5 brands worth of product in the same order. It's exactly as we intended. And we really hoped that people would use the site to find new products, new categories. So there's lots of changes to come still on chill.com, integrating over the course of the next few months, you know, the ability to shop by mood or function, you know, rather than just product type or by brand. And there's lots of other user experience kind of tweaks that we'll be making. But yeah, as I say, I think we now actually can call it a marketplace for real.
So do you see customer numbers increasing and average spend increasing in terms of what's going on the marketplace?
Absolutely. And it's certainly steady. I think that the key point that I would make there is brand numbers are going up. It's becoming better and better to shop on chill.com. 2024 is a year when we really have to turn our attention to driving new traffic to that site, not relying on existing customers, not keeping them just in our funnel, but finding new people to be shopping with us. And the analogy I'd use there is if you, you know, you're redeveloping a town, a holiday resort or something, and you send people to that location too early on when you're still, you know, putting up the buildings, they're not going to recommend it to their friends. They're not going to go back. Consumers are very, very fickle. If they go somewhere and don't have a great experience the first time around, or they don't find what they're looking for, they'll probably never return to you. Now we've actually got a website that is befitting of what we're trying to achieve. We've got quality brands. We've got good products. The user experience is better than it's ever been. And so I think now we can actually drive people to that site, be proud of it, and know that there's a good chance they'll continue to come back to us. So we are ready to start driving more traffic, and it's something we'll be turning our heads to in the new year. You know, one of the key areas there is obviously as our site expands, we're no longer just a vape website, just a CBD website, and that opens up a whole new realm of marketing possibilities that were never open to us before in the pay-per-click ad marketing, you know, sponsored posts, you know, various other forms of media that now, you know, give us a, you know, potential route to new customer acquisition.
And if you were to have a crystal ball and go forward 6 months, obviously we've gone, I think, from zero to four, well, not zero, but our own products to 46 brands now across the two scenarios in the US and the UK. What sort of numbers are you hoping for sort of 6 months, say the middle of next year, middle of 24? How many brands do you think could possibly be on it? Obviously, you know what the pipeline looks like.
Yeah, I think certainly, you know, in 12 months time, it's a punchy target, but I'd like to be, you know, up beyond 300 brands on that site, if not more. I think that's totally achievable. We've now got our onboarding process really nailed down. You know, we're working with those brands in a really effective way. And, you know, companies are now coming back to us and saying, well, we, you know, trialed it, we'd like to put some more products on. You know, our probably one of our most successful launches to date was Wild, which is the natural deodorant. It's aluminium free, it's reusable, and people really took to that. And it is always a case of, you know, what brands grab people's eyes. We can't be too precious about that. We're the marketplace, not the brand.
That grabbed their nose, not their eyes.
Well, very much so. I mean, it's great. It's great stuff. But, you know, I do think that we will be up into the hundreds, you know, this time next year and beyond from that. But it's also a case of making sure that the site grows in a sustainable way, making sure that we're not, you know, weighing ourselves down too much in one area. So we have leaned heavily into alcohol alternatives, into beverages with alternative ingredients. Today, we launched a Peak State coffee, which is a nootropics coffee. It gives you the kind of focus and the energy, but without the jitteriness of a normal caffeine drink. You know, that sort of thing's very popular. But we're
there's a lot of people moving away from alcohol, isn't there, on the sober, that they want to find a non-alcoholic, you know, zero alcohol or something, as you say, an energy drink that gives them, you know, it lets them wind down, but doesn't give them the nasty, you know, anxiety or whatever the following day.
Precisely. I mean, another brand we brought on is Sentia, which is a you know, it's an aperitivo, it's a spirit alternative that, you know, gives you a bit of a buzz, but doesn't, you know, have a psychoactive effect. It doesn't get you drunk by any means.
What about the ashwagandha as well and the lion's mane? They're good.
Yeah, oh, very much so. I mean, I think, you know, we're trying to balance it out, as I say, not just beverages. We don't want to, you know, just be known as a beverage site or just be known as a vape site. You know, we want that balance. I use Yumi's products every day. That's, you know, 5-HTP sleep gummies, ashwagandha, which is, you know, focus. And, you know, I find that stuff works wonders. And now it's a case of educating people about what products they might want to buy and also then driving new traffic to the site. But there is, you know, the aim of having something for everybody on there, and we're not too far off of it.
Do you think the Gen Zers, as they call them, are kind of more into this sort of health and wellness type products?
I think it's a really mixed bag. So obviously, you know, we get a lot of people sort of in their early 20s through to mid 30s purchasing products on the site. But equally, you know, we've got people in their 60s and 70s, you know, coming back every single month for a reorder of the same sorts of, you know, wellness products, whether that is, you know, as you say, an ashwagandha gummy, whether it's a nutritional supplement from someone like Huck's. It's such a mixed bag. And I think wellness really is out of its cage now. It's not just the mainstay of people who, you know, you consider to be living in Hackney, that the kind of hipster crowd. It is, you know, mainstream. People want to look after themselves better. That's one of the products of the pandemic. And that lends itself really well to us, because I think everybody can identify with wanting to feel better, you know, to perform better and to look after their bodies and minds. So that's only going to become more of a movement, and we want to be right at the center of it.
What about, Callum, chill brands, vitamin supplement, etc.? You know, if we create a brand here, is it such a great step to sort of turn around and say we have our multivitamin gummies, you know, without anything else? In other words, just vitamins. Is that something that you've ever thought of?
Yeah, I mean, I think when we were in that position in 2022, having raised, you know, and looking at all options, really all options, to determine what the brand should become, how we can create value, alternative kind of chill products outside of the CBD space were very much on the cards. We kind of explored that, and I'd never write it off in the future either. Of course, you know, look at what Amazon does. They put brands onto their website, they see what works well, and then they bring out an Amazon Basics range of the best sellers, which, you know, whether it's disingenuous or otherwise, it's a great way to do business. And I can foresee us doing that in the future as well. Right now, our focus has got to be, you know, very closely on growth of the vape sales and also on, you know, growth of traffic to that channel. I certainly don't want to introduce new products that don't have a home already baked in for them, you know, when they arrive on our website. But yeah, absolutely, there is, you know, very much room for that. We recently interacted with, if you remember our chew pouch products from the CBD days, a nootropics pouch product that, you know, tastes great and also seems to give you a bit of a sort of focusing or mind clearing effect, which is great. So I would never say never. I do think that, you know, the Chill name, the Chill brand lends itself to many, many different applications. It's just a question of timing and when is the right, you know, opportunity for us to seize on that and start marketing more of our own products.
So after today's announcement, we've been obviously talking about how many shops it's in, how many have sold to reorder, you know, shops being reordering. Just give us your take on this scenario about vapes within the UK, because I do believe that probably Chill's share price has been hammered partially because of this, that, you know, people are talking about vapes being removed from the shops in the morning. So give us your thoughts on it.
Yeah, change is coming to vaping. There's no, you know, doubt about that. You know, it won't be immediate change. Whether we'll have the same government in charge when that actually comes along, I can't tell you that either. But what I would say is, you know, there are sensible changes that have been mooted. I agree with them, and I think that they will eventually come to pass no matter what the political landscape is. And those are things like, you know, restricting the use of descriptive words in flavors that unduly appeal to young people. And I think that is very sensible, because there's no reason for those flavors to actually be on the market when you can continue to market fruits and actually normal flavors that adults do enjoy, as you normally would. I think it's also sensible that we look to crack down on the way that retailers are able to interact with vapes. I think that it is a travesty that trading standards, whether it's due to underfunding or lack of resources or whatever, are currently not issuing the necessary fines to retailers that are selling, you know, illicit vapes under the counter or vapes to people who are underage. But that is an age-old problem. It's the same as alcohol. It's the same as cigarettes. You know, it continues to happen and it will continue to happen, but we need to take a close look at it. Beyond that, in relation to disposables, you know, I've agonized over that question an awful lot. I think that obviously, you know, we're somewhat potentially insulated being in the nicotine-free space, but that doesn't mean that I want to, you know, rest on our laurels. I think that we obviously already have a 3000 puff device that's rechargeable. I think you can see more movement in that direction to make sure that the environmental impact is limited as much as it possibly can be. But also, if you remember, Kev, when we were out in Dubai, we've got the Chill Pod device, which is, you know, similar to an old school Juul, where you buy a battery unit, you buy the pods that you slot in and replace. And that is, you know, inevitably much more sustainable. We will be launching something of that nature when the time is right. And to qualify that statement, you know, at the moment, consumer demand very much still leans towards disposables. So when that switches, and I think there will come a time when it does, we're already, you know, in position to take advantage of that. But as I say, change is coming. We're ready for it. You know, we're not a business that is sort of so concrete that we can't pivot as needed. And I think we've demonstrated that over the last 18 months, changing from, you know, a CBD pouch into the, you know, the company as it stands today. And whatever happens, you know, I think let's look, you know, could there be a tax on vapes? Yeah, possibly. And if that happens, everybody in the industry will have to roll with it. And, you know, that's business, isn't it? At the end of the day, you have new challenges and you overcome them. And that's where the upside is.
I think it's only a matter of time, as you say, that because I think France, that there was a bill to ban the single use, which I think has been approved, isn't it? And I think it was yesterday or the Monday, actually. So it's all these countries, you've got Australia, New Zealand, you've got obviously Britain, they're going to be reviewing it. So I think it's only a matter of time before you're going to have to implement something along the lines of the refillable or the reusable type vape, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, look at, you know, how that actually tracks across to sustainability, which is another area that the government and the media has really hammered home. You know, I think the biggest challenge is, as I say, vapes are already widely recyclable. You know, it's just getting people to do it. We've had recycling curbside in this country for a very, very long time now, and there are still people who don't recycle their milk bottles. It's getting the customers to do it. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink, even if you provide it with the biggest trough you can. And so, you know, I think that more can be done. You know, as I've said in, I think, previous RNSs, we've been working with Phoenix to Retail, the Vaping Group, other partners who are obviously very attuned to these issues, and you know, we'll be continuing to work towards that, recycling schemes and what have you. So look, change is coming, but change doesn't have to be a bad thing. I think the industry should embrace it.
Regarding the show, you did a show, I think, at the Birmingham International. I think it was Birmingham International. How did it go? And I mean, I saw the setup on the stage. It looked extremely good. So give us your thoughts on what happened at that.
Well, I think, look, we did the UK Vape Expo at the Birmingham NEC in October. It went off really very well. First, you know, outing of our brand at a trade show. We had a great stand and we made a real impression. We had a lot of people coming up to us asking, engaging. By virtue of that event, the fact that it started as, you know, a hobbyist category and has evolved into something much more, there's a lot of very old school vapers who've been, you know, involved in the industry for, you know, 10, 15 years, even, you know, at the higher end, some of them now, coming up to our stand, trying a Chill Zero nicotine-free device and being really pleasantly surprised. You know, they would often say things like, you know, normally zero nicotine doesn't taste as good. Normally zero nicotine doesn't give you a throat hit. We've really carefully designed these products so that you do still get those sensations, and they enjoyed that and appreciated it. So that was the first thing. We opened a considerable number of sort of retail or independent retail accounts there of some of the convenience stores, some of the vape stores that came along for the weekend. So that was very, very useful. We've obviously made some great contacts there. But on a wider level, in relation to parts of Africa, in relation to parts of Europe, you know, we garnered interest from, you know, attendees who are looking for brands that are on the up, and we are without any doubt one of them. So it was great for building our network too. I think there will be lots of good things that come of it. There are already good things that are coming of it, but above all else, you know, it showed that Chill Zero is a serious contender. We're right there next to Elf Bar, next to Gold Bar, next to Ski Crystal. These are the most important and, you know, best recognized names in the vaping industry, and Chill Zero is sat there next to them, you know, fighting its corner, and I think that, you know, we'll do even better in the next few.
So Callum, one of the other things that's happened is that obviously we've managed to get listed on Amazon. So tell us how that's gone. Is it sort of slow start and then hopefully it's going to pick up, or what's happened?
I think Amazon has been better than we really imagined at all. You know, since we started there during November, our traffic's picked up to the site. We've started to go up the rankings. We're ranking really well for nicotine-free vape. We're ranking better than we were for vape generally. And, you know, Amazon itself is cross-selling us with Elf Bar Zeros and Crystals. You know, one of the best things there is that, you know, obviously from a standing start of, you know, a few vapes a day, there's been really significant growth there. So we're picking up, you know, 20 new purchases every day. We're picking up, you know, a handful of repurchases that are coming back. Obviously, they're getting it on Prime, so they get their products within a day of ordering it or so. And, you know, yeah, that channel, obviously, as an alternative e-commerce channel for us outside of chill.com, is very valuable. But then, you know, they're not the only site. As you know, we've talked about Flawless, we've talked about Vape Local, but there's also, you know, a number of others. If you search Chill Zero Vapes online, you know, you'll find them in all sorts of different outlets and vape superstores, vape marketplaces in the UK, also in the US now too. And if they can all do what Amazon is doing right now, then we will do really very well indeed.
Yeah. Just remind me again, do they, Amazon, use their own fulfillment system or method whereby they buy in bulk and then sell from their stock, or do they do like an ordering where you deliver a set amount every month or whatever?
Yeah, so they don't buy themselves. However, we position our stock in the Amazon warehouse. They'll give us kind of weekly or even daily, if you want, reports to give you a kind of granular forecast for what you need to put into their warehouse. You know, we've already run out at once and put some more in there. But yeah, it's all sat in an Amazon warehouse. It's what gives them the efficiency to get the product out within a day. And it's the same model that we'll use when we turn our attention to, you know, as we're starting to, Amazon in Europe. You look at Spain, Poland, Germany, you know, France. These are areas where we can very easily switch on with the right packaging, with the right, you know, approach and listings, an Amazon, you know, listing for our product, which takes us into Europe with very little heavy lifting for us to do.
Sounds good. I mean, on such a short notice, you've gone up to 20 per day. I mean, it's not a big leap to go to 50, 100, several hundred a day, I'm sure, on Amazon with that many customers. So that again, would obviously add to the total fulfillment of vape sales. And yeah, I think what possibly could happen is as people start to get knowledge of the product, use it, like it, they're going to buy it in lots of 10, not lots of one.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it goes without saying that customers are fickle. They like to try different flavors. They like to know what, you know, there is. But once somebody finds their vape flavor, particularly somebody who is actually using vapes to quit nicotine or tobacco or whatever, they will stick with the one that they like. That's their preference. And you've got a customer for as long as they continue the habit. So I think people will start buying in bulk in that way. We've got a couple on chill.com who really like their flavor of choice, and they come back to us, you know, every month or so and buy more. Of course, as I say, on reorder cycles, these are not your typical 600 puff vapes. It does take people longer to get through them. But, you know, of course, our hope and what we're targeting and what we're seeing is that people like that and buy more of the product. So, you know, it all comes back and closes the loop. But yeah, I do think we'll see people buying 10 packs on Amazon before very long.
Okay, so my last question is, what's coming ahead then? What can you tell us is coming over the next sort of 3 to 6 months? And what can't you tell us, I suppose, is probably more important.
Yeah, three to six months, you know, further rapid growth of that vaping channel. I think you'll see some new product development coming down the track in that area as well. But generally just widening our distribution channels. We'll get to a point soon enough where we're able to give some kind of reporting that is, you know, more specific on reorders. But as I say, we're already starting, or not even starting, we're already seeing, you know, locations come back in 6 to 8 weeks and pick up in their products again. You know, WH Smiths have now got their first batch of the product following the purchase order that was RNS'd out. They will be ranging it into their stores over the course of the next month or so. That'll be our first, obviously, major retailer picking up the product, and not our last either. You know, we've had a lot of conversations with a lot of people over the course of the last 6, 8, you know, 12 months about this product category. People are very interested in it. You know, we are seeing retailers getting asked for it by their customers. That tracks then through to distributors and wholesalers and back to us. So there is demand there, and we're a legitimate brand that can fill it. The other thing that we're seeing and will continue to see in the United States is the FDA, the regulator there, is getting more and more interested in the marketing of nicotine products that are unauthorized. If you remember, that's why we ended up pulling our TFN, tobacco-free synthetic nicotine pouch product, back in the day, because we didn't want to go through the enormously expensive process of, you know, taking that product into the market the compliant way. We've designed these products, the Chill Zero devices, to be very specifically compliant. And as a result of that, we're able to compete in a market that is squeezing nicotine products like Elf Bar. So I think we'll see some very good growth there. And then, you know, turn to the marketplace. So I've already given you an estimate there on brands, but, you know, I think we'll see the net widening on different types of products, more alcohol alternatives, you know, hemp infused products that perhaps give people some degree of buzz, but without getting them drunk. You know, lots of different areas where we can, you know, ply our trade, create a sales channel and deliver, you know, ultimately revenues back into the group. So that's what I can say. In terms of what I can't say, again, you know, no comment, but I think you can count on speaking to me, you know, a good few times in the very near future.
Very good.
Sounds good.
Very good. Callum Summerton, CEO of Chill Brands. Thanks very much for your time.
Thanks, guys. Good to speak to you.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.